the dark, I play my dream.
Welcome to episode 406 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes.
Permaculture PIMP with Soulful Grace in the PIMPcast where we find a place.
Oh, good to be here with y'all. Man, what a crazy weekend. And now we're getting into a crazy week of crazy weather. How about that? This episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be happening October 27th through the 31st in Harmony, North Carolina. We also have online tickets as well, so you'll be able to watch it live. And you can get your tickets. Go to the website. We got a link down below if that's why you're checking us out. And TPC will get you 5% off. So, as your standard, they're also our biggest sponsor out there. Food for Health 15 will get you 15% off for any new customers that are kicking over there. I'm not sure how much longer that thing's going to go, but it can't be too much longer. For any orders over $100, they're going to cover you for 15% off. Well, I'm a little bit exhausted today. William knows why. I'm not going to share all the reasons completely right now, but I'm sure you understand, son. How you doing?
Pretty good. Just staying warm in this icy tundra that we have in East Texas right now.
Yeah, man. Right now it's 14 degrees before I came up here, and overnight it's going to be down to 3. So, I mean, you know what? I'm not going to complain, man. Stefan Simkowiak, who was just here, he sent me a text earlier of it was like a screenshot of his weather for the next week. There is not one day they're above zero. I mean, I think the high was like negative 13 or something like that. I wrote back and said, man, I don't think I'm going to be complaining over the next few days about my high hovering around freezing. So, yeah, man, it's all relative, man. But as I was telling them and a number of others, people think I'm crazy, but I was warmer in Alaska at negative 70. I got to negative 70 one time in an Arctic 10-man tent or even walking around. I was warmer there than I've been in Texas in the middle of winter.
Absolutely. Like today, was it this morning? Because I was taking Emily and the baby out sledding, and not like down hills. I'm the the sled dog in this situation where I got a rope tied to it and pulling them around and everything. But I was out there in just pants. Nothing insulated or anything like that, just pants, t-shirt, and then like a pullover. And I was perfectly fine in like temperatures that were in the teens today. I was warmer today in the teens and wearing very little clothing than I have been in like 40 degree weather when it's more humid here in Texas. Yeah. Like once it's dry, the temperature is pretty okay to deal with. But once it's like humid, it just penetrates everything that you got on.
Which also reminds me, for all the folks out there, look, sadly, I've had a fair amount of experience in very cold environments. Look, if it's just like William said, remember, the number one casualty we would see up there in Alaska, the number one thing would be dehydration. Because when it's cold out there, people just fundamentally don't want to drink water. So you would have to make people drink water. Folks, it's that important. It really is. That it wasn't frostbite. It really wasn't. It was dehydration. That would be your number one casualty. So you got to remember that for yourself as well. And I'm not talking about drinking things that are going to take it out of you, like coffee, things like that. You know, you want to stay away from diuretics, and coffee is one. You know, you don't necessarily have to give it up, because I know people ain't going to do that. Just realize that you're going to need way more water than you think you do when it's cold out. So, don't forget about that, man. So as far as what we've been doing around here, it turns out I was texting Ben Holler back and forth, and I tell you what, man, that guy's spidey senses are on another level. every time he makes some kind of like quiet prediction to me, it seems like it always comes true. And he was saying, man, I think here in North Carolina, this is going to be, he kind of floated it out there to me. He says, dude, I don't think this thing's going to do anything they said it would. Now, that would be, you know, okay if that weren't the first time he's ever done it. But, man, I'm thinking about buying a couple of tickets to Vegas with him, man. We'll put him, hey, Ben, tell, red or black, man, I'll put it all on there, man. This guy, his spidey senses are really something else. So, no, at least in this part, because I know there's a whole lot of people that are suffering.
Yeah.
I just want to say at this part where we are right now, you know, they were even telling me on the weather app that down where he and Jason live, they were, you know, it was, you know, record inch of ice and all this other stuff. I know guys working for FEMA right now that came all the way down from Pennsylvania. You know, big goose egg around here. Thank God. I mean, I'm not disappointed. Sorry, you boys came down here for nothing, but I'm glad this thing didn't do what they said it was going to do. But now we kind of double down on dangerous at this point, because now it's going to get really, really cold overnight. It's going to thaw a little bit. Then, you know, folks, just exercise some caution. If you don't have to be out there in these roads, I mean, you got so many people out there that are jabbed. You got another set of people that are just plain crazy.
Just plain stupid. There were a bunch of stupid people here right before this snowstorm happened. It was like people at Walmart or whatever grocery store, people would just, it's like their brains turned. It was the definition. All right. It's the definition of an NPC. You know how you're playing a video game and you got all these NPCs around, which are non-playable characters. Like they're just around and they're just standing around and they don't really, like, if you're moving your character, they don't move out of the way. Like you got to bump them out of the way, or the video game, just like you push your way through. That's exactly how it was in real life in the grocery stores before this event happened, like a week before that happened. People's brains just turned off.
No, you got a good point there, man. I've often said that, look, man, I'm just going to keep it real. There should be opposite. There should be designated hours for when men shop and when from when. I'm all about segregation when it comes to shopping.
Yep.
And guys, go in there, get what you need. Women are looking at the shelves. Ladies, look, shoe fits, wear it. If it's too tight, take it off. But I'm telling the truth. When guys are shopping, there will be a woman every single time who's looking at something but doesn't realize her cart, she's got it positioned in the middle of the aisle and you can't get by on either side. Now, this ain't all women. I would say, in my experience, 90% of them.
99.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. You block the whole aisle completely, not even guy. I've seen older guys do this too. Man, guys are just, man, I'm not looking at a bunch of stuff, man. I know what I came in for. Thank God these days I don't shop in the middle aisles for the most part, unless I'm after some beans or something, man. But I mean, for the most part, I'm working on the Outer Banks. So yeah, anyway, man, don't get me started. I went out there to go get, I think Michelle didn't want us to eat our seed potatoes that we got up here, because I was about ready to cook them, because I wanted her to make some of that potato soup that she, you know, that potato soup, you know,
yeah,
you love.
That and, potato soup will put you out.
It, man, you tell me about it, man. So she was like, you're going to have to buy some potatoes. I'm like, what? We got a whole room full of them. She's like, no, those are my seed potatoes. And I'm like, oh, man. So I got to go to the store and go get these potatoes. As I'm going in there and I'm going through, I'm just kind of looking at what people are preparing with, you know, because at that point they're telling this thing is going to be a downright apocalypse. I kid you not. There was not a single cart that I passed that didn't have Coke in it. Now this is, it makes it a little less sympathetic for the people that may suffer out there. I'm like, of all the items there was, I mean, there was soft drinks in every last cart I looked at. And then, you know, I wasn't really paying that close attention, but, you know, I had to get a few other things around there. And I'm just kind of looking in the carts. And I'm like, man, this is what people are eating these days, huh?
I mean, you know what our Walmart ran out of?
What's that?
Water, which is, okay, that's good. Milk, okay, that's good too. And beer.
What about toilet paper?
Oh, yeah, toilet paper was gone too. Yeah, toilet paper was empty. I think there were a couple of, like, six-pack rolls left. Of that single ply stuff that nobody wants to use anyways. And then all the beer was gone. And it's noticeable because they rearranged our Walmart. And if you're heading towards like the milk section, you're not going to like miss the whole beer island thing that they got going on. It was empty. it was like at some point they just like saw whatever beer was left and they're like, yeah, that'll do. And then they just stocked up on beer. But like all the staples, the stuff that you could like, you know, cook with, even like off grid type situations, all those were left. Yeah, it was mostly just the milk, water, toilet paper, and beer that were just empty.
The beer essentials, I guess. And I mean, like toilet paper, man. I'm like, I don't get this. Every single impending disaster. I mean, what? People have teeth in their butts or what? I mean, what do you intend to do? Eat that toilet paper? I don't get it. I don't understand why, if you have limited funds, why toilet paper is going to be at the top of your list. Man, back in the day, they would roll up a Sears catalog or something, man. I mean, and don't think it didn't happen, y'all. But there's many of people back in the day running around with mud butt because all they had was the Yellow Pages. There was a whole lot of X misses out of them Yellow Pages, believe me. No, I'm dead serious. That's kind of how we had to do it growing up. I'm dead serious. I mean, this toilet paper where we grew up was kind of a luxury. So, yeah. Hey, I'm just curious. Oh, Homestead Twins in the house, man. I'm wondering, man, William, they sent me some stuff, dude. Wait till I show it to you, man. I can't believe I didn't already think of showing it to you. Man, you're going to say, man, this is the coolest thing around. But anyway, I'm just curious, what is the temperature up there? Because these guys down, I guarantee they probably show up down here wearing a t-shirt. So, these guys, sure. We talk about some polar bears, man, adapted to some nasty weather. But I'm just curious what it is up there where you guys are.
So, real quick, what ended up happening up in North Carolina? Was it a big goose egg or did anything happen or what?
We had a little bit of ice. I mean, I'd say maybe at a 16th of an inch at the best. And then it came to rain. I'm not disappointed in that. And then, it was really, that was about the end of it. Right now, the wind's kicking and it's, 13. It's going to go down to, they said it was negative 10 this morning, currently 6 degrees. All right. Well, we're going to be in close territory, but I guess you guys stay at those temperatures, man. We ain't quite used to that around here. So I'm wondering how much hate mail I'm going to get over that last video I just did. It just went out. Like, what do we do for nasty weather when I don't know what I called it, but like, what do we do with nasty weather animals in nasty weather? And the short answer I'm going to tell everybody here in this podcast is nothing. Well, we do a couple of things. Obviously, you want to make sure they got water. That's it. Make sure they have some MMS. I can't say what that is. I think I said in the video MSM. I meant MMS. I can't say what it is, otherwise they will shut down this video. And honestly, outside of that, man, this is why you call animals that aren't going to make it. Now, there is one ram down there that I meant to call earlier. He's pretty small, and I don't know if he's got the moxie to get through tonight, but we're going to find out. I wish I'd have put him in the freezer already, but this is going to be the coldest one. If he makes it tonight, then, he's good to go. But, man, these animals, folks, they don't need the kind of babying. I saw some videos out here. Jack Spirko sent me one a little while ago of these people bringing their chickens into the house in Dallas.
Oh, no.
No, I mean some, like, the highfalutin kind of houses, man, like in the living room kind of houses.
No.
Jack, that ain't happening. I will let every last one of them things die right there in a blizzard before they ever come inside my house. You shouldn't. That's exactly. I can't tell you what the breed of any of those chickens is out there except for the rooster. Outside of that, we bred them right here to be adapted for right here. And yes, they're going to have some extremes from time to time, but that's what you breed for. If it looks like they can't stand it, well, that's why they got to go in the freezer. If they can't handle it, they can handle way more than you think. And when you baby them like that, you're not doing them any favors. Now, if you got a barn you can put them in, okay, yeah, if you got the room, but if you don't, it ain't the end of the world. I mean, do you think Greg Judy's putting all his stock in a barn right now?
No, he didn't. Greg Judy didn't take, he didn't put any money aside to building shelter for the animals. As cheap as he is, he ain't doing that.
Hey, they'll eat the snow. Hopefully not too toxic of snow, but I mean, I'm sure it is a whole lot of videos out there of people burning snow and it, coming out black or whatever, or smelling like plastic. A lot of those videos out there, but I mean, by and large, folks, you don't need to go through. There's another guy, I know of him personally, talking about putting plastic on the inside of his chicken coops and then hanging drop lights in there. You're not doing your birds any favors by doing those things. Mm-hmm. You're not. You're not bringing out the toughness in them. You want to breed out the things that don't work. And then let's say it were a grid down situation. You got time to do all that. You're going to waste power on heating the chicken coop. I'm not. So, especially when you got so little of it to share. But anyway, folks, like I said, son, I'm curious. I bet I'll get a whole lot of hate mail out over this thing, but that's how we do it, man. I'm not going through. Did you go through any, I mean, what extra steps do you go through, son?
The only thing that I do for the chickens is bring the water inside at night, just so that way it's thawed. I just make sure that they have extra water. The only other thing that I did was added the extra metal to that chicken coop, because it has the chicken wire front and then the chicken wire back, and I just close those up, which is typical for winter for that style coop, is just to close up, because there's extra ventilation built in for the hot summers and everything. But I just now added the corrugated steel for that, or the corrugated metal for the front and the back. Other than that, I mean, I make sure they have food. I make sure they have water, and they're on their own after that. Make sure they have plenty of bedding. But those are all normal things that you would do outside of extreme events. That's just basic, like, chicken maintenance. But yeah, as long as your roosts, especially with chickens, as long as your roosts are over, what is it, like an inch or something like that, then they're protected from these extreme temperatures. Then when they roost and they sit down, their feathers will cover their feet, and then you're protected from any kind of frostbite and stuff.
Well, it depends on the design. They could be in danger. I mean, that's why exactly I have them. I have a flat place where they don't actually roost in there. They do, but they can put their feet down where their feet are flat, and they're putting their breasts on the feet, so they don't get frostbite, even in, you know, on a round perch or something like that. Yeah, Ken and Amy said, I've seen more posts about bringing your dogs in if they're cold. Yeah. And like they say, I ain't no way I'm bringing a Pyrenees who was born and raised outside. And that's exactly it. These Pyrenees, you can ask William, the colder it gets, the more he loves it.
Yep.
Now, where you got to watch out for those guys is when it's really, really hot and they don't have shade. But in the cold, last year, somebody, I think, tried to poison my dog, and he was out there shivering. Now, I got some suspicions about who might have done that, but he lost a lot of weight. He was not in great shape at the time, and anyway, we got him nursed back. But when these guys are good to go, they don't need a whole lot. I mean, they could sit there and hang out in that snow indefinitely. In fact, he does. That's exactly what's going on. Yeah, Emma. M said, what? Yeah, some jerk poisoned my dog and did some other things around here too, like cutting our hoses. The Lord will take care of all that for me. I don't have to worry about it. But yeah, there's some people out there doing some really nasty stuff and some other things. Cut one of my fences in here. Yeah, we had a jerk do that. And I got a real good idea who that is. But be waiting for you next time. They got technology down there now. Anyway, some other things we've done around here. You know, it's just basically a full court press. I mean, making sure the water is good to go. Everybody obviously needs to do that. And then trying to incorporate different things into my life right now where I'm making my brain work differently. Like I'm getting back. I'm starting to teach myself how to juggle. Why? Because
you forgot about that.
Yeah. So I was coming real close. And then for whatever reason, I ended up stopping. So I'm getting back to doing that, back to brushing my teeth with my left hand, doing things with my left hand, breathing slowly. Now, this is what I'm trying to be more and more conscious about doing is, you know, most of us just go through the day and, you know, your autonomic nervous system is basically running the way you breathe. But you'll find out from people like Erwin LaCour that if you can, you'll be way more chill throughout the day if you just slow down your breathing. And that's what I'm trying to be more. Even when you're working out, you can slow down your breathing all through your nose. In fact, if I were to do it, the only reason I'm getting really good at it, but the only reason during a podcast I can't do it is because it would be an awkward sounding podcast if I were to take every breath through my nose. And plus this mic would pick it all up. Yeah. But outside of that, when I'm talking in regular conversation, I'm doing the best I can to, you know, make sure that stop long enough, breathe through my nose, and then continue. I do it subconsciously now every time I pray. So that's where I taught myself to start doing it. But anyway, I'm getting back to that a little bit more. And the other thing we had going on today is had about almost a 3-hour meeting with our prayer warriors, you know, getting us prayed up from the feet up with a lot of the, you know, a lot of the warlocks and the other garbage that's going on around this place. I mean, like nothing I've ever seen before. People that call themselves Christians. We were talking about this with Ken and Amy. I mean, I never lived in a place where more people called themselves Christians, but dabbled in witchcraft.
Yeah.
I don't even understand that. I don't even know how you can mix oil and water like that. But this is what it's like. I mean, when you get in the mountains, you get a lot of these weird, you get a lot of weirdos up here. And then finally, the last thing for me, I didn't mean to go on so long, is that I'm on my third liver detox from Dr. Edward Group. He has a liver detox system, and I've been really, really checking out a lot of his workout on X, and I've been through his urology program, and I'm a big student of his, and I love the stuff he talks about. And he was talking about how, man, I mean, the stats blew my mind, that nearly every American, in most cases, most Americans' livers are operating at 20% capacity. 20%. Wow. I mean, that's most people is operating. He said there, and I said it before on the show, that he said there was a, so if you go to globalhealing.com, I think is his website, he has a liver kit, and it takes about, you know, your 4 days. It's pretty simple, but folks, let me just tell you right now, if you do this thing, on that last day, I'm just going to warn you right now, there's going to be things coming out of you that you didn't know existed.
Which end?
The back end.
Okay.
And it might freak you out a little bit. Just know that I told you ahead of time, but that's how toxic all of us are. And I'm less toxic than most, or at least I thought I was. So I did one the first time. I'm like, okay, this is weird. And then did it the second time. It got weirder. Now I'm on time number 3, and I'm going to keep doing it till it ain't weird no more. Yeah, he said there was a guy. He talked about this guy that came in with the big C. And doctors didn't give him any chance at all. I think he did like 18 back-to-back liver cleanses, and he's healed. Wow. So, and then he went on to explain that, you know, in just about every healing regimen out there, the thing that's neglected, here's the cool thing about it, is that once you buy the kit the first time, the olive oil and the magnesium that you're going to use, you can actually buy that stuff off the shelf. You want to make sure you get good quality olive oil, but you can save yourself a lot of money just by buying the 2 other things from him and then doing the rest of it yourself. I said all that to say this. Look, man, if most Americans are running around at 20% capacity, he's saying that explains why everybody is like in the state that we are. So I'll keep y'all abreast on it, man. But until this thing clears up a little bit, man, I'm just going to keep doing them. And, I'm going to encourage everybody else out there. I mean, I don't get paid anything for this. I'm just telling you what I'm doing. And there's other protocols. You know, this is just the one I'm doing right now. And honestly, from the crap they're dropping from the sky, the stuff that's in your water, it's in your food, it's everywhere. I think you're going to be blown away with, look, man, I'll just leave it right there, son. Go ahead.
Well, that gave me an idea. A lot of people ask for like a book list episode of like books to read and everything. We should dedicate one episode to like who to follow on Twitter or X, books to read, and who to follow on YouTube and everything. I think that would be a pretty, and like reasons why. I think that would be a pretty helpful video, because a lot of this information that you're finding as far as like health goes can only be found on Twitter. Like, you can't find it on YouTube. You can't, or in a book. You can find it in a book and stuff. But yeah, I think that would be a helpful video. Mary Jane says, if you have chicks, do you leave them outside without heat when there's no feathers? No. If you have chicks and they don't have their full feathers on or anything like that, even if it was like, let's say spring, you should still have them inside in a brooder, maybe not inside, but in a controlled temperature environment with a heat lamp and everything like that, if you want to keep the survival rate high. If I guess you could do the stun method on some chicks and you know, outside with the freezing temperatures, but I don't think you'll have very many chicks left. And it just kind of seems cruel to put some little baby chicks through that. But they, yeah, definitely yeah, keep them in a brooder with the
heat. That's the quickest way to kill them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't do well with 5 degree temperature fluctuations, let alone 70 degree temperature fluctuations. But as far as here goes, we didn't get much in like of what they were forecasting as far as the weather goes. I think at one point they were predicting 24 to 29 inches of snow. I don't think we got any snow at all. All of our precipitation came in the form of like freezing rain and sleet, which then froze. Shockingly, we didn't lose power. The only time we lost power was last night for like 15 minutes. And I think it was more of just a maintenance thing. Now, Dallas, on the other hand, a lot of them lost power. A lot of Memphis lost power. A lot of Nashville lost power. And then a lot of like northern Mississippi lost power as well. Because I mean, the Southeast just isn't like equipped to deal with any kind of ice or snow or anything like that. I did go for a drive today. It started melting a little bit. We still have a ton of ice accumulation. I think it's like, if I had to guess, somewhere between a quarter and a half inch of ice, just looking at like the trees and how much was on the road and everything. I drove around a little bit earlier once everything started melting, just to see what the state of things was around me. As far as the roads go, see if any of the main roads were squared away or anything like that. Nothing has been cleared. The only clearing that's been done is whatever has melted on the roads, but there's not been a single snowplow around. There's nobody treating it with salt. There's none of that going on. The cops are kind of going through downtown, going back and forth at a, like a slower speed just to make sure there's no dummy. I think they're just trying to limit how many dummies get on that road and try to speed on the ice and stuff like that. But we really haven't gotten much. Took the wife and baby sledding yesterday and today. By sledding, I mean like I got like a tote lid, drilled a, it actually was the tray in the bottom of a dog crate, drilled two holes and attached some 550 cord and just started pulling them around. And I'm spinning the baby around and everything. She loved it. She, like any other little kid, like, will just suffer with the cold and want to keep playing outside, even though she can't feel her hands or anything like that. But yeah, she was cracking up. She loves the ice, loves the snow. Anytime somebody hints at sledding, she's like, yep, right now, more and more right now, in her own words, more and more right now. Yeah. But
yeah, that's cute.
Thankfully I got the raised beds built last week and filled and mulched and everything like that, so that way we can use this snow event or this ice event as some like passive composting in the garden. So it was good timing there. I was thankful for that. But yeah, that's about all that's going on.
Explain that, son, with the how the snow and the passive composting. Explain exactly what you're talking about there, because a lot of folks really don't know.
Yeah, actually, I did a video on it Friday, I think. I did a video dedicating like things to do right before your snow comes in. But the fastest decomposition rates that have ever been recorded has been underneath snowpack. So the reasons why is that it's a perfect, like, stable temperature. Like, it might be unstable above. There might be a ton of fluctuations above the snow. But if you think about it, underneath the snow is acting as an insulator. So it's going to protect it from the fluctuations above the snow. And it's also going to be a slow, like long release drip of water. So it's keeping perfect moisture content and it's keeping a very stable temperature. Now, not all of your organisms are going to thrive at that temperature, but there's a lot of organisms that will thrive at that temperature. So if you can get some organic matter on the ground, or they can adjust to that temperature. If you can get some organic matter on the ground and then it snows, then you have the perfect situation for decomposition to occur. Believe it or not, it's faster decomposition rates than like the rainforest or anything like that, or even maybe even your compost. It might even be faster than your compost. I'm not entirely sure on that one, but as far as like naturally occurring decomposition, underneath snowpack is the fastest. So like I was saying, if you can get some organic matter on the ground, let's say every year you have guaranteed snow, get some organic matter on the ground, let it snow, and then you can like passively build up your soil that way. In fact, one guy I did a consultation for up in Michigan, he's not living on the property just yet, but he's preparing the pastures that he has for the time when he does live on that property. And the way he's doing that is just rolling out hay in the fall before the snow comes out.
Smart.
And then it snows, and then, you know, you go through the whole winter, and then each spring he's going to get a better and better pasture because of the organic matter that's put down before the snow. So even though he's not out there and he can't run animals out there, he's still able to build soil in preparation for when he can move out there and run animals.
No, great, great, great strategy there. All right. So before I move on, look, folks, man, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in this world right now. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but this thing up in Minneapolis where, I mean, who knows what's real these days? Who knows what's engineered? From what I saw, and I don't care who hates this, folks, you got to start asking. I mean, murder is murder. Okay, so government is allowed to do it at, you know, they have a monopoly on murder, apparently. What I witnessed there, and I'm a political atheist. I'm definitely no Democrat, and I ain't no Republican. I don't know why anybody would ever claim to be either these days. They're all a bunch of polecats. But what I saw up there was absolute murder, cold-blooded murder. And yeah, what was blowing my mind is I'm seeing evangelical Christians make excuses for it. The dude was unarmed. Bottom line, the guy was unarmed, and you get pumped full of lead through your back, and then you got people that are on fixed news. That's exactly what it is. That's why when that old timer was on the other day and he tried to go on about Fox News, I let him have it.
Well, he was disarmed at that point, wasn't he? Didn't they take his concealed carry?
Absolutely disarmed. You stick a gun in his back, and then what blows my mind is that you have the same people out here saying, well, you shouldn't bring a gun to a protest. Oh, how come you people on the right didn't say that when Kyle Rittenhouse smoked somebody? Okay, so you have fluctuating morals? This is exactly what's killing this country right now. Look, I don't care who does it, right or wrong, murder is murder is murder is murder. Bottom line. And I can't even believe some of the people, I don't know. What's flooring me is that the evangelical Christians seem to be, by and large, the ones that are the first ones to call for genocide, first ones to call for, you know, government-sanctioned murder. And because it was your side of the house that did it, you're okay. So when the pendulum swings the other way, I'm going to throw this right back in your face. I guarantee it. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but look, I'm just floored at how many people have fluctuating morals. There are things that are right and things that are wrong, no matter who does them, whether it's being done by Israel or whether it's being done by us. How is it our guys at Abu Ghraib go to jail for what they did, and it was a fraction of what's being done by the Israeli army, but it's okay when they do it? How's that cool? Folks, we live in a place, if we don't wake up and smell the corruption, we're all going to fall asleep drinking the hemlock. Your standards should be set in stone when it comes to things like this. Like you said, son, he was completely disarmed, four cops on him, and this Nimrod that smoked him in his back could have shot one of the cops that was in front of him. It could have went through him and ricocheted one of the other guys. This is the most cold-blooded thing I've ever seen. Well, I ain't going to say it's the most cold-blooded thing. Murdering kids out there, that's cold-blooded. But this is definitely up there. So, folks, I want you to think about, go to the Lord in prayer on this and find out whether or not I'm okay. Find out whether or not your heart's okay. I mean, find out whether or not this stuff is okay. But I'm not going to stand by. Every time I do this, you get these Trump tards that want to send me all these letters, and that's exactly what you are at this point. If you're okay with genocide, don't listen. If you're okay with just cold-blooded murder, don't listen. But it's wrong no matter who does it. And just because they're wearing a badge doesn't make it okay.
They're just telling you what gang they're a part of.
Exactly. It's the Democrips and Bloodlickens, as Jesse Ventura put it. But yeah, I'm sure finding it pretty curious that the same people that said, well, don't bring a gun to a protest. No, that's exactly what the First Amendment says you can do in the Second Amendment as well. Where does it say in there, except at a protest? And you didn't say anything about it when Kyle Rittenhouse smoked or blew that guy's arm off, which I was okay with. This one, no, not okay.
But to say that you can't have a gun at a protest insinuates that, like, oh, there are times where I do not have the right to defend myself. Like, that's what you, like, I think most of you guys would agree with me. I have the right to defend myself no matter where I am. If I'm in a courthouse, if I'm at school, if I'm at church, if I'm at a protest, I should have the ability and the right to defend myself and whoever I'm with, my family, no matter where I am. But if I'm at a protest, oh, I forfeit the right to defend myself.
Yep.
Like, you're not going there to start a riot. You're not going there to attack people with a weapon or anything like that. It's the same. It's the same as carrying a weapon to Walmart. Like, you're there just in case anything happens. You're carrying just in case anything happens, praying that nothing ever happens. I hope I never, ever, ever have to use a gun in self-defense. But it's there just in case.
Well, look at the people that are, like I said, I'm not going to spend too much time on that. But folks, I mean, this is a heart condition. We have got one sick society. If you can defend the stuff that has been going on for the last couple of years, and then, you know, this guy gets murdered in cold. I mean, I don't know what his political stance was. Chances are I'm 180 degrees out of phase with him, but it doesn't mean I want to see anybody murdered. I mean, especially when you're exercising your First Amendment. And no, when you're, remember, that First Amendment has five things: freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, the right to assemble peaceably and petition the government. That's the First Amendment. But everybody says, oh, it's freedom of speech. No, there's five things in there. Go read it. Go find out. Go memorize it. All right. EMF rocks, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Look, y'all, I'm trying to bring to bear everything I possibly can. William's holding one up right now. EMF,
yep.
Repel some of the EMF problems out there. And I got one in my pocket. Like I said, I keep it on my hip right next to my whip at all times. 10% off with promo code PERMA. Bond Charge, you want some ball and glasses like this that are going to protect your eyes from that blue light that you shouldn't even be around in the first place? Well, Bond Charge will get you squared away. It's not B-O-N-D, not like my last name, but B-O-N Charge, 15% off with promo code PERMA. And just like everything else that comes out of Australia, yeah, they do some, sadly, we used to do really good craftsmanship too. But, you know, something, you think it's a little curious that I can't even tell people to buy Made in America fence chargers anymore. So,
oh, yeah. Made in America just means more expensive now. It also means better quality.
Obsolescence. It also means planned obsolescence. We engineer everything to break. So, sadly, I got to go to other countries to get things that actually work. All right. So, good news stuff. I'm not actually going to do it this time. DMSO Unmasked, a natural cure for vaccine-induced cancer and SV40 depopulation conspiracy. Okay.
I can't say those things.
I just said them. Hey, y'all, look up Delta Mike Sierra Oscar, okay? Go look at what it does for you. Go to Brighteon. What is that called, son?
Brighteon.ai. Go to Brighteon.ai, and it's a legitimate AI that you can use. It'll give you actual, real answers regarding, like, all of this health stuff.
Yeah, so go over there and find out all the incredible things that you can do with DMSO, not only concerning yourself, but also your animals. I mean, I've seen it do things that I thought was nothing short of miraculous.
Overnight.
Overnight, yeah. When it came to a sheep that I was going to swear I had to take out. But I didn't, and she's out there running around right now. But anyway, when William and I were at the Healing for the Ages conference, I was sitting right next to Judy Mikovits. Folks, she's like an American legend. In other words, this article's talking about SV40 and the depopulation conspiracy. Now, it was called the Cutter event back in the day. Man, I really am not going to do the story any justice because it would really take me about a half hour to kind of lay it all out. But basically, SV40 stands for Simian Virus 40. So it was a monkey virus that they had 39 other versions for. And to put the polio vaccine into people, they made an adjuvant out of the simian virus 40. And what they found out is that act alone created the war, created the cancer epidemic. You never heard about this, folks, because you don't know who Judy Mikovits is. Some of you do. Dr. Jack Cruz talked about the very same thing. And that's when it all started right there for everybody that, you know, got that vaccine. Anyway, they found it in the latest jab that Trump endorsed. Huh? How did it get in there? How did it get in there? And people like Judy Mikovits said that it would be. But anyway, there are people out there doing experiments with DMSO that's going to help mitigate some of those results. But I can't tell you what it is, folks. You're going to, like William said, you're going to have to go to Brighteon AI. All right.
So no, real quick, if you want to hear the interview that Dad did with Dr. Judy Mikovits, I don't know if you have it up anywhere, but I have it up for free on my Patreon. It's under the Permaculture Consultant. So if you go to my Patreon, it's absolutely free. You don't need to sign up for anything. You don't need to pay for anything. You can watch the interview that Dad did with her at the Healing for Ages conference on my Patreon account. Should be pretty easy to find.
We got it up there too somewhere. I want to say it's on Rumble, but it may not be. But anyway, Judy Mikovits, an American hero, and most people have never heard of it. They even murdered her husband. Talking about murder all of a sudden. All right, so here's the next good news story. Was that good news or not? But anyway, the powerful case for playing sports as you age, from stronger bones to sharper minds. There's a reason why a whole lot of older folks are going out there playing this pickleball. It makes a big, big difference. Look, just because my dad used to always say, look, man, just because I get older doesn't mean I'm turning in my recliner for a rocker. And he made a really good point. It doesn't mean that just because you get older, I mean, so many people retire and then they go in there. It's not long before they're being shoveled into their graves. So I'm not a big believer in retirement. I don't see any reason to ever do it. I think maybe just fight in a different direction. But anyway, this article makes a really good case. They can keep your mind. First of all, if you're exercising outside in a sport, it's always going to be better for you. Whether it's playing frisbee with the kids out in the yard, whatever the case may be, just get your butt outside. We are victims of comfort in this country. And then finally, here's one where I got a little, I disagree with this article a little bit, but here's the good news. They're saying studies, sleeping in on the weekends could slash heart disease risk by 20%. Now, I don't ever sleep in. Ever. Unless I'm very ill or something, I don't sleep in. Now, here's what you do. Don't sleep in because you want to get up and see the morning sun. You want to see that sunrise if you possibly can. Because that UVA, I mean, you're getting stuff that's going to be a healing frequency. You want your eyes to look directly at it, which is exactly what I do. And I've talked about it on my Patreon exactly as I'm looking at the sun. I mean, I'm looking dead into it. Now, you can do it for a time before, you know, things start changing, but that's where you're hitting your supracosmatic nucleus, your anterior and posterior pituitary. All these things are telling your body, go, 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 and also to heal. Now, when you sleep in, I don't know what that means for most folks, man. I don't ever sleep in. If anything, I'm going to bed earlier. So that's where I would disagree with this article. They're saying, look, you can slash heart disease by 20% by sleeping in. Forget a bunch of that, man. I'm just go to bed earlier. Get up at the same time. I'm not going to miss another sunrise, Lord willing, if I can possibly help it. Certainly not by sleeping in. So,
you can achieve the same like heart benefit just by getting the appropriate amount of sleep. I'm assuming that they're saying like sleeping in on the weekend because you're going into a sleep debt the whole week prior to that. That I think that's where they're probably getting that 20% boost. But if you just have good sleep hygiene, like you get the appropriate amount of sleep each night and you try not to go into that sleep debt, you're going to have overall pretty healthy, you know, heart response to that. I was noted whenever I was a sleep technician doing the studies for the testing and everything like that, it was crazy how much the heart is connected to how much sleep you get or don't get, or the quality of sleep that you get. Like if you have sleep apnea, according to the test, it wasn't like an if you were going to have a heart attack. It was just like when you were going to have a heart attack if you have sleep apnea and everything. So
it's interesting. Yeah. And there's, you know, I had probably the worst case of it, y'all. I don't use a machine anymore. So, you don't, as long as I just govern myself the way I ought to, I don't have any problems with it. So, anyway, with that said, y'all, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, right livelihood. How we spend our time in this life matters. How we trade time for money makes a difference. Who do you serve when you earn your shekels? We know the world is run by psychopaths and almost certainly demons in human suits. If you have a better explanation why world leaders would poison the planet that they and their families live on, I'd love to hear it. We have no realistic chance of changing the minds of the psychopathic demons, but we can still reach the foot soldiers carrying out their dastardly deeds. These people are our family members, our friends and neighbors, and our community members. The military carrying out genocide, the border patrol not patrolling the border, the ICE agents kidnapping citizens, the police enforcing unjust laws, the scientists with no ethics, the doctors without conscience, the tech bros in general, the pilots, farmers, and landscapers covering this planet in poison, the bankers, the lawyers, and the insurance agents, anyone involved in profiting off of destruction, the politicians and prostitutes whoring for Zionists, most of Israel, the actors shilling for all these companies, and the real drug lords, the CIA and Big Pharma, and the advertising agencies selling us all lies. How much is your soul worth? The masters you serve will toss you aside as soon as you have no purpose. You are loyal to your own self-destruction. Our economy and most all our capital is funneled into these destructive ends. There is better work for all of you. Work with purpose and meaning. Work based in ethics to facilitate abundance. Come join the permaculture army and help create a peaceful revolution, because we have jobs for everyone forever. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. If you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of the Pimpcast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there, boy. He knocked that one out of the park again. And boy, he just got me thinking about something where he's talking, you know, Jennifer Lawrence. Is that the one that was in Hunger Games? That was the girl in Hunger Games. Yeah, she just committed career suicide. She just came out and called what's happening in Palestine genocide. So pretty much one of the only actors out there to do it, an A-lister no less. So she'll be relegated to B-movies from now on or never act again. Kind of the same thing that happened to Richard Gere. So you stand up to the beast out there, and there's going to be consequences. But, you know, big hat tip to the people that do. Anyway, Eric made me think about that too. But, yeah, good stuff as always. All right, so I'm going to jump right into this, y'all. Before I do, my chronic silver. Promo code PERMA. Look, I got any issues at all, man. Even T over at Mountain Readiness, man, which he was in the chat a minute ago, he was coming down with something, used that stuff, and bam, knocked it right out. I've done the same thing. There's no better stuff out there, y'all. I know everybody likes colloidal silver. Yeah, go with that if you want to. But I'm a chronic man myself. I'm a micronic. Micronic, man, I'm telling you, there is death. I'll pass the silver. That's what I'm talking about. Head up. Yeah. Micronic silver, 10% off with promo code PERMA. All right, so this show was inspired by this message that we got in here. It's from Connie.
Do you want me to read it? Oh, you got it. Sorry.
Well, if you got it handy, go ahead.
Yeah, I got it. She says, "Hi, I'll try to keep this brief. My community is fighting a data center. I know realistically they will come somewhere despite fighting like hell against them. Can you or your son maybe do an episode, if you haven't already, on permaculture designing your farm to be people-proof? In other words, are there additional water collection steps or maybe designs to counter a data center sucking your well dry during a drought? I'm talking more than nature throwing a curveball. Do I need to plan my farm to potentially be like a desert? Thanks for all you and your son's insight. Also, please pray for us and everyone fighting these things. The more prayer power, the more I know God will do amazing things for his people." Connie.
Yeah. So Connie, number one, yeah, we do pray for y'all and everybody out there. We do. And we're asking you to pray for us as well, because when I tell you the slings and arrows coming at us in a big way, folks, you have no idea. There's a reason why I got to, you know, team up with some prayer warriors around here from time to time, because it gets a little bit hairy sometimes. Won't go into the nature of it right now. But anyway, we do not coordinate with Eric. And this is right in line with what he was just talking about. We, folks, I've worked on many, many, many data centers, okay? And one particular time, I was like the general foreman at the biggest data center in the world at that time. It was one of the Cerner data centers. Since that time, it's been dwarfed many times over. I was over there doing all the controls in one of these data centers, and I know my way around them. I've spent a lot of years doing that kind of work. Data centers, powerhouses, things like that. I mean, industrial electric work, that's my bread and butter right there. So I've kind of briefly talked about it before. I got friends, a lot of friends in the trade, and some of them that are engineers in the trade. And what's happening with these data centers is unconscionable. Absolutely unconscionable. They could easily take a lot of the water that cools these data centers, put them in the cooling tower, and then recycle the water, but they don't. In fact, I almost gave up my friend's name, but he's like the lead engineer on a project. He's like the number three engineer, probably one of the biggest construction places out there. We're really good friends, been friends for a long, long time. And he said he does not have a good reason, because I'm asking, hey, bro, why are they not recycling this water like you would at a powerhouse? Why don't they do this? He says, I don't know, man. Every single powerhouse that we're part of, it is all engineered to basically go down the drain. So they use it, flush it down the toilet. There is no reason, like I said, you couldn't put this water through a cooling tower and recycle it. There's no reason. But they're pumping this water out of the earth. If you take Bluffdale, Utah, the biggest data center in the world, which, by the way, had enough storage space in just that one data center alone to handle all the information that's ever been recorded on this earth like 50 times over. And now we got other data centers. So why do we keep building them? What is the bigger impetus here? What is going on? Now, I got a whole lot of theories as to why that's happening, but that's not answering Connie's question. I don't even know that most of you would want to hear exactly what I think I know regarding some of this stuff. Like I said, I've worked on Facebook data centers. I've worked on, you name it, I've worked on it. And I'm here to tell you, just one building in that Facebook data, I'll say this one thing and then I'll jump into Connie's question. There's five buildings at that one, at least when I was working on it, at that one in Fort Worth. One building, they told us, was enough to handle as much, basically all of the data on the planet. But they were building five more, right, or four more right there on that site. Why? Yeah, there's an answer to that. Maybe I'll get into that in another time. But let's get back to Connie's question.
Dad, could we not use like sewage water to cool these plants and stuff? It's not like we're growing food with it, but could we just take a bunch of people's, like a city's worth of poop water and cool these towers?
There's so many different ways they could go about doing it. So many different ways. I mean, it is absolutely insane how you can go about doing it. Now, every data center inside your data center part, they're on raised floors that are about 2 feet tall. And all the air conditioning basically comes from underneath and it blows out through these little plates that have holes in them. And so it keeps everything cool. Not a bad place to be in the middle of Kansas City in the dead of summer. So, you know, you are, but you're also getting Kentucky Fried in there from all that EMF, because it is a EMF nightmare. But anyway, to your point, absolutely. You could use any number of things to do this, but they're intentionally wasting this water. Now, there's a big thing out there, like Connie's talking about, where the people are worried about, look, man, they're draining aquifers, they're going to be doing all this stuff. If that ever has happened so far, I'm not aware. I mean, I've heard a lot of anecdotal stories. I haven't heard of any of it actually happening, but it wouldn't shock me none, because nobody cares. I mean, all the water they're stealing out there in Bluffdale, Utah, nobody cares. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, man gets smoked in cold blood, still nobody cares. So many different ways they could go about cooling these things off. And it could be like a powerhouse where you cycle the water through alongside of a river and then run it right back into the river. I mean, you could do that. There's so many easy ways of doing it. But to Connie's point, I'm just going to suggest right out of the gates that you design for zero dependence on a well. I mean that. Whether you're getting your water from the well right now, you need to design for zero dependence on it. So assume that the well fails or gets throttled in a big way to maybe you only go down so far, but maybe they went a little bit deeper. So what does that mean? Roof catchment on every single structure. I mean, gravity fed storage instead of, you know, pump resilience, because it could be the power that they're robbing too, because guess what? It is. If you only knew how much data centers are using up so much power on the grid, it is insane. So plan for your power, plan for your water as if you got no dependency on it. That's where I think you're going to have to wind up getting, which also probably accounts for the reasons why they're trying to smoke most of us. Go ahead, son.
Now, since her question was more of like, how do I people-proof my property? I put in points here that apply to like outside of just the data center too. So it's going to be more of like a general, like how to protect your property from people basically polluting the commons or disrupting the area around you, just for future points. But the first point I'll bring up is the build a community of like-minded people with within driving distance. Do what Tag did over at Life Done Free with Tag and B. They had, Dad and I were talking about this earlier. I can't remember if it's a data center or a solar farm. I think you're right. I think it was solar. A solar farm. Yeah. But in Kansas, they had people, even though they weren't, even people that didn't necessarily live in the town or the county that was going to be affected. But since they have like such a large community, everybody within their community drove to the area for this county, like the town hall, the county meeting or whatever it was like that. They filled the entire place, and the solar farm was like, wow, it's going to be easier to do this in a different town, basically. And just their presence there is what stopped it. It wasn't just like they didn't have to like provide some awesome argument, or they didn't have to sign like a petition or anything like that. Just having that many people opposed to what they were trying to put in that community stopped that solar farm from going in. And that was it's just by having a community of like-minded people within driving distance. They don't need it. And by driving distance, like, let the person who's distant decide what's driving distance for them. Driving distance for me, like 5-hour drive isn't much for me just because I'm on the road a lot. I'm used to driving far distances. Whereas like for somebody else, like 45 minutes might be a pretty, you know, far distance for them, for a community. But yeah, build that community, and build the community before you need the community. That's a pretty important part. So many people will have a problem arise, and then they try to build the community around that problem. It's already kind of too late at that point. And not saying it's impossible, it's just kind of too late at that point. Try to build the community before there's any kind of issues. And all you have to do is, like, another issue with building community, like Tag was saying at this one event that I was attending, is that too many people tried to niche it down too much. He's like, there's only a handful of things we all need to agree upon. If we can all agree upon those things, then we're all going to get along just fine. Try to come up with like a list of like 5 things the whole group needs to agree upon. And if they agree upon that, they're part of the community. And then participation in community events kind of vets some of these people out. If you don't participate in the community events, then I guess you're not a part of the community. It's not like anybody's kicking anybody out. They just kind of weed themselves out and everything. But yeah, build the community for when the problem arises. And it just needs to be like-minded on a few like topics, and that's it.
But all right, think about massive water storage, not just collection. I mean, most people collect water. I get it. But almost nobody ever collects enough. Definitely not enough. So think about multiple tanks instead of just one big one. I know one guy that ended up getting this massive, massive tank. You get a hole in that thing, or some good old boy decided he was going to put a hole in it. Especially if you put it down low, you're in a bind, nephew. So, you know, buried or berm tanks, man, those are excellent ways to go about doing it. Or I think they're even better because it's below ground, but you know, you're always going to have to be worried about toxicity, especially with all the junk they're spraying out there. And then think in terms of months, not days. Look, if the data center is going to run 24/7, and it will, your storage is going to have to as well.
Yeah. So my next point is, and this is kind of like a 2-for-1, but it's protect the land legally, like your property, protect it legally with a trust or a PMA or a conservation easement, whatever it is. And in conjunction with that, collect evidence as often as possible. So that way you have, and this kind of applies outside of the data center, more of like, for instance, like a solar farm, if a solar farm's going against you or being built next to you and stuff like that. But protect your property using the means that are provided, meaning like the legal means that are already provided. Use what the elites use. Use trust to protect the property. Use conservation to protect the property and everything like that. Conservation easements. And then collect as much evidence again, like for whatever they're doing as possible. And I've noticed this, like that people that we've helped before in the past, even though whether it be like whatever the issue is, it's like nobody wants to put in the effort to collect the evidence, or nobody, like everybody thinks like, oh, this is just one instance, this isn't going to be enough. But it's everything put together and presented that builds the story, not just like one particular piece of evidence or two pieces of evidence or anything like that. You got to get like a whole catalog of evidence from as the first time you notice it to present day. Collect as much evidence as possible and protect your property legally using their methods of protection. And that should be able to, like, that'll give you like legal standing and fighting whatever is being presented for your property.
On you. All right. Think about key line and subsoil water banking. And what I mean by that is instead of fighting a drought, you can hide the water underground. Just because they're wiping out an aquifer doesn't mean that that's where your well is. It's not like maybe, the Ogallala Aquifer in the middle of Nebraska. Well, actually, it's not just Nebraska. It's all over that region. It keeps going down and down and down and down and down. Well, my friend who's a sheriff out there, he used to do wells. And there are other pockets of water that are there. So that brings me back to, you know, key line ripping on contour, man, that can go a long way in putting that water. Every drop that comes on your landscape, you can put in the ground. Obviously, swales, we've talked about them ad nauseum, you know, and they infiltrate and they don't just, it's also good tree growing systems out there, you know. And then think about maybe in certain areas, depending on where you live, organic matter to increase the sponge effect that it's going to have, you know, it's going to help infiltrate that water into the ground. You're building an invisible reservoir under your feet. And what you'll find out when you capture all this water is that you're eventually going to make springs downhill from it, you know, if it's done properly, especially with some good key line or swales or whatever the case may be. You want to capture every bit of water, and it doesn't mean you're just giving it all away. Plus, a lot of that is going to maintain right in your soil as you build your organic matter.
Yeah. The next one for me is install windbreaks and a riparian edge for your property. So that way, anything that comes into contact with your property or enters your property goes through some sort of filtration process, or using a windbreak just goes over your property. So if you're dealing with like overspray, or let's say as they're building the data center, you get a bunch of dust and like silica being blown over to your property. Well, you can install windbreaks on your property to make sure that wind just goes over your property. It just keeps bouncing over your property, hitting the windbreaks, or install like a riparian edge for your property. So as the air goes through the riparian edge, it's getting filtered, the sediment and the contamination is being collected on the edges. Or if there's water entering your property, it's going to be filtered as it enters into your property. If you're unfamiliar with the riparian edges, it's that edge along the out, like where the land meets a body of water. Could be a river, could be a pond, could be the ocean, whatever it is. But it's that edge where there's a bunch of filtration plants that basically like clean and oxygenate the water before it enters the greater body of water. So if you think of like your property, the center of your property being like a body of water or something to protect, something to keep clean, then install that riparian edge on the outside perimeter. And it doesn't have to be entirely around your entire property, but you know which direction some of these inputs are going to be coming from. You have predominant winds, you have slope, and things like that are all going to dictate which direction some of these inputs are coming from. You can put your riparian edge, you can put in your windbreaks in those direction and kind of focus your efforts. So
think about shade being water. Now I'm going to define this a little bit, and I'm going to try to help you redefine I'm going to redefine what I'm talking about here. So think about this, shade being a source of water. Now, what do I possibly mean by that? Every degree you save on that ground temperature is saving water. Okay, there's a reason why there are 7 layers. Depending on whom you ask, it could be 8 or even 9. But there is a reason why there are layers all the way through the forest, okay? There's a reason why nobody has to water it. Nobody looks after anything out there, and it comes back. Well, the same thing in your garden. It should be that way out there in your garden, but let me talk about pastures for a lot of people out there. The hardest thing to get people to understand when they raise animals in this environment is that they feel like their grass should look like it does after it gets mowed or like it does on a golf course. Folks, I am here to tell you, people like Jim Garrish, Joel Salatin, Greg Judy, Ian Mitchell, and some of the best in the world will tell you that is the dumbest thing you could ever do for your land. You'd never want your grass that short. We only have it that short is because that's the way your mower, that's what you're used to seeing your whole life. The hardest thing to teach people when it comes to grazing is that it should never look like that. I just did a video the other day and look at where my grass is. The more you can cool that soil or the dirt, whatever it may be, whatever you choose to call it, the more you can keep that stuff cool, the more the microbes are going to work for you, the more life you're going to have in that soil. And guess what? The better the water retention you're going to have in that soil. That is a magnificent way of keeping water in that soil. Do not let your animals eat that thing all the way down. Let them eat, shoot, move, and communicate. That's all they got to do. All right, back to you.
Compost, compost, compost. Compost is going to, so if you're having to treat your property, like Connie was saying, like it's a desert, then compost is important. If you're dealing with contamination from outside inputs, compost is important. For all of these matters, all of these issues, compost is still going to help you. It's going to help increase water retention. It's going to help increase water wicking during like flood events and everything. It's going to help lock up and destroy toxins that might be entering your property from overspray or contaminated groundwater, whatever it may be. You can use less groundwater. Let's say your rainwater catchment is in the process of being built or you're still trying to work on that. You can use less groundwater by thinking of composting. And that could be like direct composting where you build a pile and you flip it and all that stuff. Or it could be like passive composting, like Dad was saying, increasing the organic matter on your property. Or just keeping a cover crop in your garden. Like I bring this instance up, like this example up all the time, because it's just a eye opener as far as like how well like keeping your ground cover can work. It was a couple of years ago, I planted a ground cover of red clover out at the demonstration site, got that established. And then after our last frost date, I put in sweet potato slips and I planted a bunch of those. I watered everything in, and that was the last time I watered until it was time to harvest. And I'm in Texas where we have guaranteed drought every single summer. And I had a fantastic harvest. And all I did was make sure I established a ground cover first. That ground cover is also going to keep the organisms fed for an extended period of time. And it's going to just increase the amount of like biological life is in the soil. So yeah, compost. If it can protect from the radiation of Chernobyl, it can definitely protect from whatever contamination we're running into over here. So that's in the instance of like dealing A, with the drought or a desert environment, and B, any contamination that might be entering your property.
I'm going to kick it off with, basically soil carbon as an infrastructure. I mean, remember, we're talking about trying to save water here in a lot of different ways, water and also electricity to a lesser degree. Well, maybe to an equal degree. Anyway, carbon isn't soil health, it's water security, if you think about it. This is why I mulch my trees deeply. You know what? Like William said, I don't have to water them. You shouldn't have to. If you do this right, it's like God knew exactly what he was doing, because think about it. If I put in a ton of mulch, when there is not enough rain, it will retain enough moisture. When there's too much rain, it will hold it in. It'll act like a sponge. It works either way, whether there's not enough or there's too much. Either way, you cannot go wrong with mulching your systems. Biocomplete compost, like William was talking about, mulch systems are measured in inches and not necessarily aesthetics. I know everybody's thinking about the aesthetic value of things. Well, I'm well past that. And also fungal dominant soils, or in your pasture, you're going to want about a 50-50 fungal, you know, bacterial split. But anyway, in your tree systems and stuff like that, even in your gardens to a high degree, you're going to want to hire, the more fungus, the more you're going to be able to retain water and the less you're going to need to water. So I think you got one more, right, son?
I can just list off the rest of what I had because I wrote down quite a bit.
I don't know that you should. We've already run pretty long, but why don't you go ahead and put one more.
The last thing I'll say then is post explicit and specific signage, like around your property and then around your specific community. If there's a data center going into your community, it's going to affect everybody in that community, but most people have no idea what's going on. Most people are just viewing that as like a potential source of like jobs as the data center is being built, but put in signage around your entire like property and community in protest of this data center going in. Some people, I mean, granted, most people don't care. And even if they're informed, they still won't care. But if there's five more people that join on with you that are in protest of this data center, then that's five. You're no longer just that one crazy like lone wolf that's going against these people. You now have like a small group of people that are going against these people. Even if you get 10 people, that's even better. And then, you know, inform people as much as you can around you. Don't waste your time. Like, I can't remember what verse it is, but it talks about like witnessing to people in scripture. And it says, like, try three times afterwards, dust your feet off and let your peace return to you. Treat it the same way with that. Just go to people, try a couple of times. And if it doesn't work, then just understand like, all right, these aren't the people in my community. And then move on to the next group and keep on trying. And then before you know it, you'll have a community like Tag up in Kansas where they collectively, now they don't own collectively, but within that community, they have over 2,000 acres. And I think it's like 80 some members. And it leaches from Kansas to, I think, Oklahoma to even Missouri and Nebraska. So it all starts small, but start with your local community and just try to inform them as much as possible.
Folks, when it comes to these data centers, look, as I said from the very beginning, I'm acutely aware of how these things operate. Now, they're going to tell you, oh, look at all the jobs it's going to bring in. Yeah, it'll bring in construction jobs to a point. So you may have hundreds, maybe even 1,000 people working on one of these data centers. But here's what they don't tell you. That's only until it's built. After it's built, you may have one technician. Maybe, let's say they're generous. You may have 10 permanent jobs for every building in that data center. And, you know, half of those jobs are probably going to be a guy with a Muppet, cleaning crew. For the most part, all they need is a couple of techs on hand. And AI these days is probably going to handle most of that. So just keep that in mind. They're lying to you when they say it's going to bring in all these. Yeah, they'll bring in construction jobs for a short while. And then after the data center's built, there ain't nobody there. There's just a handful. They don't need a bunch of people to run these things. That's the whole purpose of it. It pretty much runs itself. You need a maintenance crew, and really, that ain't much.
Security. That's a security guard.
Oh, yeah. You better believe there's security out there. And then they got generators on these things, man. They are the size of locomotives. I've never seen anything like it. And they got multiple generators over and over and over with these things. Well, folks, look, man, I'm hoping all this was a blessing to you. I want to thank Connie for reaching out. I thought it was the greatest show idea because especially a lot of this stuff is in the news right now when it comes to these data centers. And people may be ignorant about the fact. I can tell you because I've worked on many of them. But, yeah, as far as long-term jobs in that community, no, 9 times out of 10, no. There's not going to be any long-term jobs unless you're going to be in the maintenance department. And usually they're hiring people like me to try to, you know, come out there and do that. They want somebody in the skilled trades. They're not going to just – they want an electrician with a whole lot of years' experience working on data centers, okay? They want plumbers. They want, you know, any kind of tradesperson that's in this thing, not just off the street. They're not going to train you. They want somebody that's already trained and has been doing it for a lot of years. So just keep that in mind. All right, y'all. I want to thank everybody for checking us out today. It's been, it's been a crazy couple of days, and it's about to get crazier. Remember, drip your water at the house. Do everything you can, y'all, because it's going to be a rough night. at least here in Western North Carolina. And then over the next week, Weatherman Plus says, you know, this one, as soon as it passes, we got another one that's coming in just as bad. So a lot of you folks that have got a lot of snow, you're about to get a lot more. But you know the deal. We're always ready because you know why? We stay alert.
Stay alive.
Channel and his nature, the knowledge rings. With roots that run deep, wisdom from soil. Run across the dream, let the ideas untold. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling nature's food. We've got the answers, all we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us through. Let's see the shame. Watch the world spin from the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life. For the magic's alive.